Good morning, everyone. This morning we are in Luke 21. And he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw a poor widow putting in two small copper coins. And he said, "Truly, I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all of them. For they all out of their surplus put into the offering. But she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on." So Jesus, having divine knowledge, could see and know that this woman gave all that she had, and what a wonderful thing. And all of us should give and should, you know, allow the Lord to put on our hearts. We're supposed to give cheerfully, generously, and may the Lord guide us. And we should seek Him, you know, and I think He will help us to know regarding our giving, how we're doing, if we really seek His will on it. And this woman is recorded in history as being really generous, even though she didn't have much. What a beautiful thing. And while some were talking about the temple, that it was adorned with beautiful stones and votive gifts, he said, "As for these things which you are looking at, the days will come in which there will not be left one stone upon another which will not be torn down." And, you know, the temple did get destroyed. It got destroyed in 70 AD. That's one of the challenging things when you're looking at end times prophecy, and that's what we're going to be looking at a lot today. It's a challenging topic. Because of the fact that the temple got destroyed in 70 AD by the Roman Empire, sometimes it's hard to discern whether when Jesus is talking about that, he's talking about that time of destruction or a future time of destruction of Jerusalem and battles that will take place during the end times, during the time of tribulation. And we won't always know for sure. There's both. So both are going to take place, and it's hard to discern sometimes which one he's talking about. They question him, saying, "Teacher, when therefore will these things happen, and what will be the sign when these things are about to take place?" They're wanting to know the timing of the destruction that's going to come and also his return. And he said, "See to it that you are not misled, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and the time is near. Do not go after them." Now, you know, no one's supposed to set a date. We have to be very wary of anyone who would set a date, because there's a limit to our knowledge as far as exactly when things are going to happen. Now, there are going to be signs, and we can look towards those signs. And we should be looking for the return of Jesus Christ. But to predict it or to know for certain is not for us. In fact, it even says that Jesus doesn't know the day or the hour in another passage in the Bible. But he says, "When you hear of wars and disturbances, do not be terrified, for these things must take place first, but the end does not follow immediately." You know, so indeed, we even have wars right now, right? And they could be precursors for the end times, the tribulation and the return of Christ, like what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, even more so what's happening with Israel right now and Gaza, and perhaps if other people were to get involved, could those be wars and rumors of wars that are precursors to end times? They could be. But it says it does not follow immediately, so we won't know still the exact timing. And when he continued by saying to them, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and then will be great earthquakes, and in various places plagues, famines, and there will be terrors and great signs from heaven." So, you know, when the wars increase, we had just had a plague, right, that came through the world not too long ago. Famines. You know, of course, in Gaza, there's a famine right now, and they're trying to bring more aid into there. But I would think it's going to be more of a larger famine than because of the war. And there will be great signs from heaven. Well, that's interesting. So, you know, we'll see greater signs come. "But before all these things, they will lay their hands on you and will persecute you, delivering you to the synagogues and prisons, bringing you before kings and governors for my name's sake, and it will lead to an opportunity for your testimony. So make up your minds not to prepare beforehand to defend yourselves, for I will give you utterance and wisdom which none of your opponents will be able to resist or refute. Now, that he's saying before all these things. Now, that happened in the life of the apostles, and you know, it can still happen today in persecution of the church. But you know, Paul, as an example, was brought before governors and kings and had to testify to the things of Jesus Christ, and says that the Holy Spirit will give us words to share. They did throw the apostles in prison, they martyred the apostles, and many, many, many people lost their lives all throughout the history of the church. In particular, in the first 300 years, there was great persecution for the church, and many, many people were killed for their faith. And then it says in verse 16, "But you will be betrayed even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death." As I mentioned, that's happened. "And you will be hated by all because of my name." And then it says this, and this is an interesting verse to interpret. "Yet not a hair of your head will perish, but by your endurance you will gain your lives." And you know, since he's saying that you're going to be put to death, I don't think he's referring to the fact that they're not going to die, because he just said they're going to put you to death. But "not a hair of your head will perish, by your endurance you'll gain your lives." I really think Jesus must be talking more about their eternal salvation and going home to paradise, because he already said they were going to die. So that's how I would interpret that. Now, we get into Luke 20 and Luke 21:20. Now, here he's echoing some of the things he said in an earlier chapter that also are shared in Matthew 24. Matthew 24 would be a much longer version of what we're going to read now. And he's speaking of the end times to come, the tribulation to come. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting and probably is one of the greatest post-trib arguments, meaning that there would not be a pre-tribulation rapture and that the church would endure and have to be a witness even unto death during the tribulation, would be these passages that Jesus shared regarding the end times, because there's not a clear rapture, a clear discussion of the rapture in Jesus's teaching prior to the end times. So let's take that in, and then I'll share with you how I think the rapture is indicated. But again, this is more of a post-trib argument, these passages. I actually, today, am speaking on Revelation chapter 3, which includes Revelation chapter 3:10, which says that we're going to be saved from that hour, or kept from the hour of trial. And I'm going to be talking much about some of the evidence for a pre-trib position. But this is not one of those places I would look for evidences, would be Luke 21. "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is near." Again, that happened in 70 AD, but it's going to happen again later. "Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains, and those who are in the midst of the city must leave, and those who are in the country must not enter the city, because these days are of vengeance, so that all things which are written will be fulfilled. Woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress upon the land and wrath to this people." Now, this is one of the things I mentioned in a previous podcast that I'll mention here. Wrath to this people. And it could be that he's referring to the Jews at this point when he's saying wrath to this people, and they. It's interesting that he switches to that kind of language, which he does in 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians. He says these and they, but not you. And it could be that's what he's referring to here. "And they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until all the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." Now, that's a really interesting passage, until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, most scholars believe that when Luke is referring to the times of the Gentiles, the times of the Gentiles is when the Jews are not in leadership in the way that they were before, and having a king in a country like they were before Nebuchadnezzar in the 500s BC deported and destroyed Jerusalem and deported the people back to Babylon. And at that time, Israel lost its country. Now, that's the beginning of the times of the Gentiles. We have, what's interesting is now we have Israel back in its land, but most people think that's just a temporary thing. And also, in addition to the fact that even though Israel's back, they are, you know, as we can see, being attacked all the time. In fact, you know, Hamas from Gaza is still throwing missiles at them right now. So most people believe the times of the Gentiles are going to be all the way until the millennial kingdom begins, when Jesus comes back for his thousand-year reign, and he's leading as a king again in Jerusalem, so that the time of the Gentile is from 500-some BC all the way until Jesus returns and has his millennial reign. So Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. And this is because there's going to be more wars and more happenings in Jerusalem, more destruction, until finally Jesus comes back to rule and reign. So that's interesting to think about, the times of the Gentiles. There will be signs in sun and moon and stars, and on the earth dismay among the nations, in perplexity at the roaring of the sea and the waves, men fainting from fear and the expectation of the things which are coming upon the whole world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with great power and great glory. And, you know, it's talking about there the horrible times of the tribulation, the seven-year period, in particular the second half, but most of it's horrible. And it's going to be a really, really horrible time. Then at the end, Jesus is going to come back to earth and begin his, you know, to conquer and then set up his millennial kingdom. And that's what we hear in verse 27. Then he will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with great power and great glory. But when these things begin to take place, straighten up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. And that will be a glorious day when Jesus Christ returns. Then he told them a parable, saying, "Behold, the fig tree and all the trees, as soon as they put forth leaves, you see it and you know for yourselves that summer is drawing near." Meaning you can see the signs on a tree that summer's coming. "So you also, when you see these things happening, recognize that the kingdom of God is near." So when we see the signs of wars and rumors of wars and all that, we know that the end times are coming. "Truly I say to you, this generation," this is a difficult passage to interpret, "truly I say to you, this generation will not pass until all these things take place." That word generation there can mean race, and that may mean what it means. That's a hard passage to interpret, because it almost seems like Jesus is saying that everything is going to take place that we saw to those people of, you know, the disciples and that generation, and clearly not everything did happen. Now, he could be also referring to the beginning of this destruction that took place in 70 AD, which did happen in that generation. So, again, difficult to interpret. "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." And, you know, Jesus had a high view of the Word of God. He revered it. He believed it. And we need to as well. "Be on your guard," verse 34, "so that your hearts will not be weighted down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of life, and that day will not come on you suddenly like a trap, for it will come upon all those who dwell on the face of the earth. But keep on the alert at all times, praying that you may have strength to escape all these things, that are about to take place and stand before the Son of Man. Now, this makes it seem like, you know, most people will be there and endure the tribulation. Again, this passage leans more to a post-tribulational view. Let me keep going. Now, during the day, he was teaching in the temple, but at evening, he would go out and spend the night on the mount that is called Olivet, the big mount that was just outside the walls of Jerusalem. And all the people would get up early in the morning to come to him in the temple to listen to him. And this is the last week of his life. And, you know, we're about to actually, in Luke 22, get to the Last Supper, which is the last night of his life. So we're coming right near to the end. Now, what's important to know, though, with all of this being post-tribulational, meaning really not a reference to the rapture in Luke 21 and in Matthew 24, and this happened in the week leading up to the last day of Jesus's life, but Jesus is going to take them up into the upper room, and a passage that he shares with the apostles in the upper room is John 14, and I want to read it to you, because you would imagine with all that telling them of all this wars and rumors of wars and destruction and make sure you flee to the mountains, I mean, that's a scary thought. It's a very, very scary thought, very troubling. It's a very troubling thought. So afterwards, in the upper room, Jesus pulls his guys aside, right? And this is what he says, the last thing that he says. Do not let your heart be troubled. When I say last thing, the last thing he shares about end times. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now, I want you to take this in and really see what Jesus is saying here. So after he troubles them with end times, he talks to them and says, don't be troubled. I've got a better word for you. I've got an encouraging word for you. Believe in God, and it's for those who believe, and believe in him, the church, the Christians, in my Father's house. Now, his Father's house is in heaven. Listen, in my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. Now, in the days ahead, Jesus is going to ascend to heaven. He's going to ascend to heaven until one day he comes back. And he says, I'm going there to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, which he is, right? That's where Jesus went. He went to sit at the right hand of the Father. There's a throne up there. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, where is Jesus going? He's going to heaven. There you may be also. Now, when Jesus comes back for the millennial reign, he's coming back to earth. He's coming back to rule and reign on earth. In this instance, in John 14, he's encouraging and comforting them and saying, I am coming back to take you to the place where I am going, that's heaven, to my Father's house, and I'm going to receive you to myself there. He doesn't say he's coming back to rule and reign on earth. He said he's coming back to take them to the place that he's preparing for them in heaven. And we believe that's a reference to the rapture, and it's a comforting word after he tells them of the warnings of the tribulation, and it's to those who believe in him, and that's to the church. And that very well may be why you hear of things like these and they that we read about in Luke 21, and even in Matthew 24, it talks about the Sabbath, and the church doesn't recognize the Sabbath the way a Jew does, and in Matthew 24, he refers to the Sabbath. So we believe that the end time tribulation is for the Jewish people who have rejected him, not for the church, not for those who believe in Jesus. And I'll be talking more about that this morning as I preach on the church, the letter to the church of Philadelphia in Revelation 3. And, you know, if you can find that message on YouTube, or maybe you'll watch it later today. But anyways, there's our teaching this morning on Luke 21. We'll see you again soon. God bless you all.